This is Dave Glowatz of MrRadio.org. I'm here with Ben Jarofsky, the Chicago Reader. How are you doing today, Ben?
I'm okay. What's going on, Dave?
Usual stuff. Today we're talking about Ben's column in the November 6, 2008 edition of the Reader titled When the Slush Dries Up. And this article describes tax increments financing in a way that I haven't seen it described before, where you explain how money that is paid out of tax increment financing districts is coming mostly from bonds as opposed to the intake of the TIF districts itself. And we'll get a little more into that in just a minute. One of the things I wanted to talk about is I noticed again that this article did not appear in the print edition of the Reader, but only online. And this seems to me to be a pretty important article with respect to explaining how TIF districts work. And so it's a little, I know it seems like inappropriate for it not to be in the print edition. What do you think about that?
Well, I completely agree with you. I was disappointed that it didn't run in the print edition. There's two explanations. One, the print edition is shrinking as the Reader moves more toward an electronic future in which the paper is phased out and the Reader becomes essentially an internet site. I don't know what the timetable is for arriving at that destination. I just know that since, I would say, for the last 6 months or so, various people in charge have been telling the staffers that ultimately that's where we're heading. What sort of upsets me about all this is that I realize is that there's a lot of loyal readers, particularly readers of my work, who don't read the Reader on the internet and are still traditionalists. They read newspapers. Our generation has not yet died, despite efforts by everybody to write us off. So they're not going to get access to this story. The other point is that there was a very tight issue last week because of the election. They had an election story, and they had a tribute to Studs Terkel, and my story got bumped. I'm disappointed that my newspaper readers didn't get a chance to read it, but I'll be coming back to this point in subsequent articles.
Well, good, and at least our listeners will get an inside scoop.
Yeah.
Well, let's talk about how the TIF dollars are spent. Now, until I read this article, I just assumed that things worked this way. People paid their property taxes to the county. If they paid within a district that was designated a TIF district, the county skimmed off a certain increment from what the taxes were the year before and then gave that to the city, and the city put that in a fund corresponding to that TIF district. And then if they wanted to pay, say, a developer to build in that district, they would draw money out of that fund and pay it to the developer. But what I'm getting from your article is that they don't do that. Instead, they issue bonds that are secured by the TIF money, and they, in my example, they pay the money to the developer out of the bonds. Is that correct?
That's exactly how TIF's supposed to work. Remember, the principle of the TIF program, before it was completely exploited by the Daley administration, the principle of the TIF program is that you're raising tax dollars by developing blighted property with the proceeds of tax dollars that will be generated once that property is developed. The principle is that you are borrowing. That's the principle of TIF. It's a way of funding in the present with the promise of future tax revenues.
Right.
The idea is that once you develop a blighted piece of land, it will generate more property tax dollars, and those property tax dollars can then pay off the loans that you incurred to develop the land. So on one level, it makes perfect sense as a tool to borrow money and raise money. What's happened with Chicago, of course, is that we've turned it upside down, and Mayor Daley's turned the program into just a source of money that he controls without relation to any particular development, without relation to any particular blighted neighborhood. You don't even need to have a blight in order to have a TIF.
Further down in your article, you talked about the city's budget hearings and that Mayor Daley's aides cautioned aldermen that they shouldn't expect to be able to bond against future TIF revenue. And a few aldermen rebelled. And you say that the mayor told his bean counters to back off. What do you mean by that?
Well, this is something that I noted last year. I actually wrote a story about this, I believe, with last year's budget hearing. So it would have taken place in 07. And conversations that generally take place behind the scenes were out in the open. It was at a budget hearing, and it was Gene Schulter was really upset, and also Alderman Beal from the 9th Ward, several other aldermen, that the city was using what they considered their TIF funds, because aldermen have sort of a vested interest in this program as well, that the city was using their TIF funds to finance the construction of schools that were not in their wards. Furthermore, they weren't even sure they wanted the TIF dollars to be used for schools. They had their own interests. They wanted housing deals or economic development deals on commercial strips, or maybe they just wanted to pass the money out to their friends. Whatever, they were upset that the city had already obligated these TIF dollars and that these monies weren't there for them to spend. And so I remember Gene Schulter was adamant in his denunciation of this, and eventually what happened is that the mayor's top aides, the people who both deal with the budget and deal with city council, assured Schulter and other aldermen, don't worry, there's still money here for you to finance your dream, and that we haven't overcommitted and that you will be able to borrow against this money.
How exactly did they back off?
The particular case of Gene Schulter, he advanced the proposal, which ironically died, of buying up the entire block of Western Avenue from roughly Lawrence just a block north and convert the block into some kind of development deal. And it was actually the locals' rebellion on the issue of eminent domain that killed that plan. But the city had green-lighted it. The city had made it clear that they were going to allow Schulter to spend the TIF dollars in that way. So in that regard, they backed off.
By approving that project.
By approving that project. I think that, however, as we move forward in the next few years, they aren't going to be backing off. I think that the word that gets out to the aldermen more and more will be that this is money you cannot expect to spend, that it's already being spent.
Well, one of the things that may cause the administration to change its course, if I've got this right, the city keeps aldermen, according to you, in line because they can hand out TIF money to favorite projects that aldermen have in their wards. But if the revenues from the TIF districts continue to go down, they're not going to have the money to do that. And so aldermen perhaps will start to no longer be placated.
Yeah, you know, that's absolutely the case. Now, whether aldermen actually become more independent because they're not getting the TIF goodies is a whole other issue. But I completely agree with what you just said. Of course, you're just repeating what I've said before. But anyway.
How could you disagree then?
Yeah, how could I disagree? I think that the brilliance of the TIF program is that it's an incentive to aldermen to play along. And I've seen evidence of that in key votes. I see evidence that the mayor uses TIF dollars to fund projects, favorite projects of different aldermen. Helen Schiller is the most obvious example with her Wilson Yard TIF. Ricardo Munoz has a TIF at 26 and Costner. Joe Moore has TIFs all over his ward. By and large, he silences dissent in the city council for most of his programs by making certain that aldermen get into the TIF goodies. It'd be interesting to see if he pulls back TIF financing of favorite aldermanic projects. Will that cause a rebellion in the city council? At this stage, I would say no. I think these aldermen are so used to be second-class citizens that they'll just go along with whatever directive they get from City Hall. It would just deprive them of a legitimate excuse for their obedience.
Well, on that disparaging note of aldermen, we'll leave it there. Ben Jarofsky of the Chicago Reader, thanks for joining me today.
Take care, Dave.
This is Dave Gloetz. I've been speaking about the rest of the story. When you have a chance, check back at MrRadio.org for further installments or subscribe to our podcast. Thanks for listening.